Welcome to the GBC Big Three podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. I'm your host, Matt Willis, and joining me as co-host for the next few months, actually, is our associate pastor, Roxanne Lawler. Welcome, Rox.
Hey, Matt.
Great to have you in the hot seat with me.
Loving it. Loving being here.
So stoked to have you for the next little while. While for those who are avid Big Three listeners, yes, while Jess Baker is on maternity leave. Ooh, now, ooh. Last week we had no news. This week we do have news. I can confirm that last Tuesday, and if my math is right, it's the 5th of April, Veda Rose Baker came into the world at like some ungodly hour in the morning. Jess and Jake are doing well, as is little Veda. They're all home and just hitting up the Instagram hard with cute newborn baby photos.
Oh my gosh, Veda is cute. Veda Rose, little girl, super exciting.
Delight.
Oh,
super
love
happy
it.
For
cute
her.
Name. Oh,
they're just rocking it.
Oh,
and she's
congrats.
Like so like cute and round and just like a little marshmallow.
Don't you love huffing newborn babies that smell? You know, you got to give them a.
You do.
You do.
I mean, in any other situation, smelling another person without consent is really
bad.
Bad.
However, there's that newborn. Oh, they're
it's
so
the one
good.
Time.
It's the
not
time.
Creepy.
I know. Oh, they're so cool.
Beautiful. Well, if you're listening, Bakers, well done. Congratulations.
Yay.
We love you. And can't wait to meet the little bub.
Yay.
Delight. Well, for those of you who missed it, our senior pastor, Mark Rader, preached during our services this past weekend, launching our Easter series in 3 days. Mark spoke from the Gospel of Mark when Jesus calls out the fruitlessness of the temple. And you can listen to that message again through our regular GBC Sermons podcast. And so today, as always, in the Big Three, we're going to keep the conversation going from Sunday's message. In a moment, we're going to be joined by Mark, and Rox and I will be putting the Big Three questions to him as we dive deeper into the invitation from this week's sermon. But for now, Rox, I'm keen to hear what your thoughts were coming out of Radogs' message on
Radogs'
Sunday.
Message. It was a cracker, hey.
It was fierce,
wasn't it? It was a bit of like, I'm going to lay it down, the word from the senior pastor on high, just the slam. You know,
it was.
Jesus condemns your fruitlessness.
Yeah, it got heavy.
It did.
But, you know, he
did. It did come good at the end.
And he did it with love.
Yeah, like, yeah, absolutely.
You know.
Yeah, no, it was kind of rebuke-esque, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
I thought it was, fantastic words. I loved it.
And, like, my personal favourite moment was when he kind of impersonated a fig tree.
Yes,
and
that
ended
was
up
cute.
Kind of doing spirit
yeah,
fingers.
Yeah, there was a spirit.
As a
there
result.
Was definitely spirit fingers.
And I was like, yep,
Raiders
just rocking the spirit
yeah,
fingers.
Yeah, that was cool.
You're
going to
love that.
That was cool, wasn't it? And in hearing about, like, I mean, something we know, but you kind of don't really pick up, like, the sandwich technique that Mark uses all throughout the gospel.
Mark.
You know, like, not Mark Raider, but Mark the
author
gospel.
Author of the gospel.
Yes, like, very yeah, good. That Mark.
This is going to be tricky.
Yeah, it's going to be full on, isn't it? Like,
Mark
otherwise,
with a C and Mark with a K?
Mark has been a tree and made sandwiches. That's what people are hearing.
That's why we bring Raider into the big three and we're not the ones to answer the questions.
Exactly right.
Because these are the answers you'll get. Well, I think it's time for us to start looking at the three big questions submitted through Slido this week. So, Rox, what are our big three for the day?
Ooh, we got some crackers. So well done, everyone who filled out that Slido. The first one is, are we to assume that the role of the church is meant to be the same as the temple?
Yeah, boom.
Yeah, destruction of the
I
temple.
I mean, they're both buildings used for worship. So you can see the...
Or are they?
The correlation. Or are they?
Or are they? Is the church a building?
Here we go.
All right. So the second one is, well, what are the fruits we should bear as followers of Jesus? You know, like if he's going to condemn our fruitlessness, well, what's the fruit?
Yeah. Give us the
Help
answer.
Us. The third one is, in what ways can we actually be blinded to fruitlessness? You know, we don't see our own fruitlessness.
Absolutely right. Because like, you know, Jesus came into the temple and was like, this is a problem.
Yeah,
but an entire society was functioning
like,
under
what the heck? We
the
don't
perception
see no problem.
That this is a marketplace as well as a worship place.
Yeah, it works for
no
everybody.
No issue, nothing sus.
Mm-hmm, nope.
All right, right on. Well, I guess there's only one thing missing, the man himself, also soon to be on leave.
Yeah, but not Matt leave.
But not Matt leave. but we've got him for a little bit longer. Mark Rader, welcome to the Big Three.
Thanks, Matt. Hi, Rox.
Hey.
And shout out to the Bakers as well.
Oh, bless them.
So very exciting.
They're doing very so excited. Well.
Do you think they called it Vader, the baby Vader, because it's like Raider, a bit of an homage to you, do you think?
Matt? I can say with absolute certainty that that's not the reason.
That's not the reason.
I think they respect you,
they
Raider.
They respect
but,
you.
Not that much.
Really?
My answer was going to be, I hope not.
Yeah. I believe that it's a little throwback to the movie My Girl.
Oh,
and if
that's
it's not,
so
then that's what I
We're
thought of.
We're just making okay. that up.
When,
Jess is probably
so
somewhere
shaking
twitching,
head, like
shaking,
Willis,
going, stop
don't
it, everyone.
Don't speak that over my child. But that's what I thought of when I heard
so
of it.
Nice.
The little, you know, there she goes.
Maybe she'll tell us one day.
Maybe
she
one day
comment.
She will.
It can be the fourth question.
Yes, the fourth question. Why? What's it made of?
Where did the name
What is in the name?
The significance of Rose.
Well, how are you going, Rader? This is your second last week before you smoke bomb and leave us to our own devices.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm doing all right. I'm ready for a break. You know, I've said to a few people that, you know, it's all kind of work to plan. Like, I didn't take a lot of leave in January, you know, so that everyone else could take leave. And then I knew I had this big block coming. So it's appropriate that I'm tired, but I'm ready for a break. So it's kind of working out quite nicely that way.
What about those of us who took leave in January but it also tired?
Speaking for a friend.
Should have thought of that earlier.
Now, so. I guess more importantly, what people really want to hear is, for those of you who weren't there on Sunday, Mark got gifted a brand new hockey stick,
yes,
which had its maiden voyage on Sunday night.
It did. It did.
How'd it go?
Well, we lost.
Yeah, well, we're so not sorry. The stick's fault. Yeah.
Not the stick's fault. No. It's a user error, I think, is the way that works. No, it was great. A bunch of people from the church came out to the game, which was funny at so many levels. I don't think I've ever seen a crowd that was more ignorant of the sport they were watching.
but more supportive. Yeah, come on.
But who didn't let that get in the way of just being into it. So they were raucous and loud and, you know, cheering for everyone on my team, and like my teammates were killing themselves. I thought it was hilarious. And even at one point after we'd scored a goal, there was a face-off at center ice and the linesman had his back to the crowd and he was laughing and the opposition forward was laughing.
Yeah.
Like, everyone was just like, what is happening? And our manager said that the young lady who was working the rink that night came up to him and was just like, what is going on? She's like, I've had fewer people at a grand final. This is like game three, isn't it?
This is what happens when the people of God gather together.
That's right.
The power of the church. Yeah, here it is.
And so I told the guys, I'm like, oh, they're just people from my church. And, you know, like, because they're all young adults primarily, you know, I think, I'm not sure. No one kind of asked the follow-up question about whether I was actually the pastor at the church or not. But I think they've probably done the math on that one. But, you know, so that there was a few, I wouldn't say awkward comments, but they're just kind of like, you know, so the people from your, like, what do you call them? Like your community?
Yeah,
I'm like, close enough.
That'll work.
So, but yeah, no, it was like, it was hilarious. So if we've made the grand final, you know.
Oh, you wait.
Yeah, it's all happening.
You wait.
I think
there
are
talks of buses being hired.
Yeah, they were printing flyers.
Yeah.
It's going to be a letterbox drop.
So it was a lot. I was really quite chuffed. Like, it's nice that people would come, not because of the love of the game, but because they wanted to watch me play hockey.
Yeah,
you know? So I just think, it was like, oh, that's lovely. So it was really nice. So
it was a vibe. It was a vibe.
It was. It was.
Before you again try and turn the Big Three podcast into a hockey podcast.
Oh, you guys started it this time.
Yeah, sure. Whatever you want to say. Let's get into the Big Three.
Mark, you spoke about, you know, Jesus and judging the temple in that great Mark sandwich, and the fig tree was cursed. Are we to assume that the role of the church now is meant to be the same as the temple back then?
Yeah, I think my short answer would be yes with a but.
That doesn't sound like a short answer.
No, with a maybe.
That's right.
You need to rethink the definition of a short answer.
Yeah, quoting Reverend Lovejoy. You know? Because at one level, I think that if you're talking about the condemnation of Jesus, then then we should not be like the temple. And the temple as a physical location is not quite what we would think about from the church perspective either. Like, you know, we do associate church with a building. Like if I say, hey, I'm going to church on the weekend, people assume I'm going to a location, an address, a physical building rather than a group of people. So in some senses, no, it shouldn't be quite the same. But I think that the function of the temple, like the essence of what temples were about, I think the role of the church should indeed fulfill. But not, again, this is the kind of yes with a but or no with a maybe. It's that whole, it's the people, right? So this is, I mean, it's actually kind of a good lead into what I'll be speaking about on Easter Sunday. Because we're going to be looking not at one of the classic resurrection passages, but at Ephesians chapter 2, where it speaks about Jesus building a new temple made up of Jews and Gentiles in this new humanity. And so I think in that sense, right, in that sense, the temple was meant to be, in antiquity, the temples were designed to be the dwelling place of the gods, right? So if you traveled throughout the Greco-Roman world and you found a temple, there would be a certain deity associated with it. And in a large part, the architecture of the building was actually quite small because it wasn't a meeting place. They weren't meeting places per se. They had plazas outside, and that's where people would meet and gather. The altars tended to be outside. The rituals and the sacrifices and whatnot took place outside, and the deity kind of lived in the temple, shall we say. And so in that sense, to then talk about the church as the people of God, as being those who in Christ are being built together to be the dwelling place of God, then yes, to come back to the question, we should be exactly what the temple was supposed to be, right? Kind of
as people, but not as a building.
Not as a building. Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, you know, what the temple was supposed to be was a place where people could approach the living God, right? Yeah. And now, again, I think the theology is a little bit tricky in the sense that I'm sure that Jews who didn't live anywhere near Jerusalem still felt that they could approach the living God, right? But Jerusalem was that, you know, it's like where heaven touched earth. That was part of the magic of temples, right? It was that one place. And so now Jesus is saying that the people are that place, you know, and when you are in, when someone was in touch with or connected to the gods, right, then you were connected to the source of life and, shall I say, the source of the good life, because the gods were able to instruct you on how to live in relationship to other people and themselves and the world around you in order to be successful as the gods had designed, right? The divine order brought into the material world, all of these sorts of things. And so, again, the people of God now, the church, are meant to be that traveling sanctuary, so to speak, that in every house and neighborhood and workplace and not ice rink, you know, they're called
especially
to be.
Especially there.
They're called to be, you know, a place where people are able to see and understand what it means to be in relationship with God. And so I think that in that sense, the promise of the church is, shall we say, the promise of the temple originally, which is why and the big shift, of course, away from a building to a person, you know, from the temple itself to Jesus himself is a fairly significant one.
It's great.
So I think it's complicated by the whole buildings people and how people function like buildings did and all of those sorts of things.
So do you think some of the mentality then of like the old school mentality of the temple, of the building being the center point of spiritual expression and experience, do you think that's still kind of playing an influence in Christian culture today? Or do you think we've officially moved away from that?
I'd still say it plays a role, right? Because although our buildings now tend to be a lot more functional, right? You think about if anyone's ever been to like one of the great cathedrals in Europe in particular, or into even like Greek Orthodox churches, which tend to be a lot more symbolic in kind of how they're laid out. You know, like we have a big box. right?
With acoustic paneling.
With acoustic paneling, right? You know,
stage.
You know, and so we've moved away from that kind of symbolic, you know, cathedral-esque, you know, Gothic architecture, you know, trying to display the transcendence of God and all of those sorts of things. But there is still something that ties us to our buildings, right? Which is, I don't think, something that we're ever going to really totally, truly get away from. But I think it'd be very helpful for the people of God to recognize that when you invite people around to your house for a barbecue, you are inviting them to church.
Mm.
It may not have a liturgy and singing and
corporate
prayers and, you know, an offering and all that sorts of things. But
it's a potluck. Maybe bring something.
It's a barbecue. It's a burnt offering.
That's right. Smoke rises. Yes. Yeah. You know, but you are, because you have people of God gathered together, that is the temple of God. Like, that's where God dwells. God is dwelling by his spirit in your family and in your other friends who are believers. And so when you invite people into that space, you are inviting them into what we would say the church is really meant to be. But it is hard to break away from, you know, centuries and centuries of, you know, associating the people of God with a particular building.
Mm.
And again, I don't think that's always necessarily a bad thing. It's just a thing. But, you know, we know in our heads that the church is not the building. We know that in our heads. But sometimes our language betrays us.
Yeah.
You know, I can't remember what I was reading a book. I can't remember what it was about. It was obviously about something like discipleship or the church or something. But they had been very deliberate to encourage their son, I think it was, not to say that they were going to church when they talked about going to the building. I can't remember what the phrase was they used, but they actually started using different language, like we're going to worship or something. Like there was something where they, I can't remember off the top of my head, but there was a break in the language. And I remember reading it and thinking, yeah, we do that a lot. I'm going to church rather than we are the church.
At all times.
Yeah, and we're going to a service of the church or whatever it was, whatever the language was. And I thought, often our language betrays us, right? You know, we just kind of go, yeah, I'm going to church. It's like, no, you're not. You're going to a building wherein there will be a worship service and a focus on Jesus and you'll hear the word of God read and preached.
You're going to a building where the church gathers.
It was something like that. I was quite struck by it because I'm a big believer in the power of language and the importance of the terminology that we use. I think that in that, I think we get caught in that space a lot. So, and which to some degree I think is why we don't spend a lot of time focusing on Jesus's language around the temple, which is kind of what I'm personally enjoying about this little series, the opportunity to reflect on Jesus's death and resurrection from the perspective of the temple. Because then we just kind of go, oh, it was just a building and it's not, you know, and now it's gone.
Yeah.
So I think we miss some of that in there. So.
Awesome.
So good. Love it. It reminds me about that whole living stones that, you know, that's what we're called to be. And so the idea that we are, you know, with Jesus as the cornerstone, the capstone, and we are the living stones. And we can't do that alone either. It's the collective gathered people of God that forms this as well. We all have that part to play. We all have the Holy Spirit dwelling in us. But together we form the body, the place where God dwells.
In the Ephesians passage, there's like three different words. He talks about the building, the temple, and the dwelling place, all in two verses, and that they're being fitted together and being built together. Like, so it's this kind of this really dense language of building, but not kind of focused on any one. It's kind of this montage language of being built, you know, together on the prophets and the apostles and all of those sorts of things. So really looking, anyway.
Ooh.
That's Easter Sunday.
So
that's
spoilers.
That's what they call a teaser.
A little taste of
it. It's a teaser. That's it.
Well, let's get on to question two. So, Mark, Jesus, as you say, and personally, rightfully so, like, gets angry, finds a fig tree who had no right bearing fruit because it wasn't in season, and Jesus just curses it and is like, you don't have the fruit that I'm looking for. That's fine. He's Jesus. We'll allow it. We all have those moments. But it raises the question, so like, what was Jesus looking for in terms of fruitfulness? I think we know when it came to the fig tree, he wanted figs.
Yep.
But to the temple. And so this leads us into our second question, and it's a more like a personal question really for the individual believer. What are the fruits we should expect to bear as followers of Jesus?
Yeah. Again, I think one of the things I found personally quite challenging and helpful about thinking through that passage, because I'd encountered it before in the sense of, you know, the kind of the way in which Mark constructs those little literary sandwiches, as they're called. You know,
just made me hungry the whole time.
There you go.
Talking about, you know, figs and sandwiches. I mean, what's a man to do?
The two outside pieces explaining the inside piece. So I was kind of familiar with that, but the idea of digging deeper into that, the condemnation of fruitlessness, led me to ask the question in the context of the message, well, what was the temple supposed to do, right? Like, okay, so Jesus doesn't like the fact that they've gone all commercial and they're changing money and stuff where the Gentiles were supposed to be able to meet and pray, fine. But like, if they'd moved that to the lower city, would that have made the difference? And you don't get the impression through Jesus' interaction with the religious leaders that that was his only bugbear, right? It's not as if you have to move the banking associations down the street and once that's done, we're good.
Yeah.
So I think there was the wider question for me wrapped around what the purpose of the temple was, because that then determines, right, shall we say, the fruit that you're looking for. So as part of that, you know, in the message, you might remember I talked about fruitless things are things that fail to achieve the desired result.
Yeah.
Right? So the fruitless search is the search that you go on and you search high and low and you look everywhere, but you don't find what you were searching for. So it's a fruitless search, but you've already put all the work in, right? If you know it was going to be a fruitless search, you could say, I'm not going to do it. And then the search wouldn't be fruitless because you wouldn't have done the searching, if that makes some sense.
Oh, maybe, that just felt like if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, does it make a sound?
Yeah, well, there's still no figs on it. So.
Spirit fingers.
That's right. So I think that the question that we have to ask ourselves then is, what is our purpose? Like, what's our desired result? Mm. And again, I think sometimes we can sort of assume that the desired result is for us to be saved and have faith in Jesus and then be good people.
Yeah.
And those aren't bad things. Mm-hmm. Having faith is a good thing. Being saved is an amazing act of grace. Mm. Being better people, you know, being kind and loving and patient and self-controlled, like the fruit of the Spirit, like that's all good. But I think it's really helpful for us to attach that a little bit more to, like, what's the desired result? Like, what does Jesus want from us? Does he just want us to be kind of shiny, happy people? Like, is that his end game? I don't know that it is, right? Mm. You know, I think that he wants more from us. Like, he wants us to grow in what we would call the virtues, peace and patience and love and kindness and goodness and self-control and the like. I think in order that we become more like him in our character. But again, Jesus's character, shall we say, is not the end game in itself.
Yeah.
Right? It's to demonstrate relationship with God. It's to demonstrate the best way to live. It goes beyond just kind of being nice and shiny.
It actually
has to do with participating in what God is inviting us into, right? So the language of maturing and being able to give a reason in season and out of season, you know, for the hope that we have, and being able to disciple others around us and help them begin to follow Jesus, and maybe at some point along that journey actually place their faith in Jesus and to grow and to develop. And so it's that kind of fruitfulness, you know, like one of the characteristics of something that's fruitful is that it's multiplying, right? Like fruit's designed in part to be eaten, but it's really designed to multiply.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, if I live out my days as this shiny, happy person, but have never multiplied in any kind of way, am I really doing what I'm called to be and invited into?
Mm.
So I think it's you know, I think the answer to the question begins by asking a second question, a prior question of what is it that Jesus wants from me?
Yeah.
You know, what is it that he wants from me? And, you know, I think we have to be, you know, careful about associating that just with achievement, right? Sometimes what Jesus wants from us is faithfulness, you know, and we don't get the results. Fine, we're faithful. But I think we want to be faithful to that end purpose. Like, what is it that God wants from us? And I think those sorts of questions become really helpful then to ask, all right, what's the fruit then of that?
You know, yeah.
So if I want to be aligned with what God's doing, then part of that fruitfulness would probably have to do with a clarity around what God's invited me into and being able to discern his voice so that I can hear the invitation and the courage to step into those and the kindness to be kind to those who might reject the one who sent me and the patience with those who might purposely misunderstand what I'm on about and the self-control to live a life that may look foolish now, but is ultimately the good life that God invites us into and the mercy for those who have done the wrong thing and yet to whom we reach out with forgiveness and with grace and with second and third and fourth chances and, you know, all of those sorts of components, but tying, you know, peace, patience, goodness, kindness to the purpose, I think is a really helpful way for us to think about fruitfulness.
Yeah.
Right. The impact that it has on others almost is a good way to think about it.
Do you think the fruits that we should expect are kind of, so like peace, patience, kindness, self-control.
Yes. Joy.
There you go.
No one mentions joy.
Be a better Christian.
Peace. Yep.
Yep. I can't list them all. But so like the fruit that we should expect to bear, is it general in that everyone should expect to bear that fruit, or can it be a little bit more individualized where it's like, well, this is where God is calling me based on my gifts, my abilities, my passions, the opportunities he's made available to me, and therefore my fruit might look different to someone else's?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there is both a general and a specific. Like the thing that sprang to mind while you were asking the question was the parable of the talents. You know, particularly I think it's Matthew's account where there's the bag of five, two, and one, you know, like different degrees of.
Don't look at us to answer that question.
That's right.
Different amounts.
Different amounts that they started with, which then. Now, the judgment was still the same, right?
Yeah.
You invested what I gave you and you, great. And the condemnation would have been the same, you know, if the fellow with five bags had buried it, right? Or buried two of them and invested three and, you know, for the same reasons. So I think that there is something specific. Like I think about, you know, in my capacity as a teacher and a preacher, I think that, you know, there should be some expectations that I, for myself, that I would be growing in my understanding of the word and my ability to teach it. And, you know, like, you think about any occupation, you probably want to be growing in your capacity and ability. And, and I may never, you may never become, you might not move up the ladder, but you want to become competent and more proficient and better at what you do. And I think that, you know, we don't talk about that so much as fruitfulness as we talk about it as experience and maturity and skillfulness or whatever the case might be, but it's broadly in the same category. So I think that there are those general things. Like, I don't think anyone has a reason to say, well, like Jesus didn't call me to be kind, so I'm just ignoring
that. I'm just going to be a jerk.
My self-control is fantastic, but I'm just not very kind. So I don't think we have any
scope to eliminate ourselves from the call to bear that fruit.
You know, but, you know, I think there are certain passions or areas of giftedness where I think we could probably allow for different expressions of that fruitfulness. I think there would be scope in that. You know, I think that, you know, because it wouldn't make any sense for me to say that every Christian ought to be able to preach. Well, because not every Christian necessarily does. So why would they?
Or needs to.
You know, and, you know, some people, I think one of my favorite, I guess, examples of this is like, I'm quite happy reading the Bible and studying the Bible and reading commentaries and digging around in it. Like, if you said to me, you know, you got to spend 1,000 hours doing that, or you have to spend like 40 hours in prayer, I'd probably choose 1,000 hours of study. I find that light labor.
No.
Find that light labor. Yeah, you know, but does that mean that I shouldn't be growing in my ability to pray? Well, no, it doesn't. But like, at the same time, there's a part of me that kind of goes, you know, well, this is kind of how God has built me, and this is kind of the way that God has invited me to participate right now. And so I kind of want to go with that a little bit.
And would it be fair to kind of go, and this is where I think more fruit will, like, I'll bear more fruit? Like, is that, are we allowed to say that?
I don't know. I think I think so. You know, and again, I think, well, it's like if I start saying that, well, I'm just never going to pray because it's just not my thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's problematic. But if you know, if I kind of go, yeah, I worked hard at my prayer life, but really no one's going to be able to tell, you know, like the fruitfulness that I'm seeing.
Yeah. I got one apple. Yeah. I got one apple. You know?
And I think that there are certain areas, you know, even in, you know, the fruits of the Spirit, there are some that, you know, I think there are some people who are just gentler in personality than others, who are more, who are going to be more fruitful in one area than the other. So, like, it's a complicated question. It's not about of us all looking exactly the same,
hitting the same KPI.
But I think, you know, we do want to be fruitful, both generally as followers of Jesus and more specifically in the areas that he's invited us into.
Awesome.
So,
love that.
I do love that. That is cool, isn't it?
That's good.
Yeah, it's really encouraging, I think.
I think it will be.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, let's get on to question three.
Oh, this one. More fruitfulness or fruitlessness, as the case may be. In what ways can we be blinded to fruitlessness? And maybe this is specifically our fruitlessness.
Yeah, in the context of the text, of course, you know, the fig tree, you know, as one commentator put it, because it was in full leaf, it from a distance, it bore the promise of fruit that it was never able to keep. Right? Like,
If I could just play devil's advocate for a moment, if I may.
You may.
It was not the season for figs.
Yeah.
So maybe if we'd given the poor little tree a hot minute, I'm just like, can we say that it never, I mean, it didn't after it met
after
Jesus.
After it with it away. That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
But I think that, you know, that the appearance of things is different than
the truth of it?
Then the fulfillment of, right? The fulfillment of the promise, right?
I think obviously Jesus knows. So, like, I trust that.
Yeah, and
it's
I think
just like, not quick enough, boom, like, you're gone.
Yeah, and I think that's the indicator that something more is going on here.
Yep.
Because it's that whole, it's springtime and you're looking for fruit and you're not finding any in you're from Galilee or something? Yeah.
It's a lived parable.
Yeah, that's right. So I think that that's the indicator that something's going on there. But I think, you know, there's the blindedness that can come from something appearing like it's fruitful.
Yeah.
You know, but once you get a little bit closer, you kind of go, actually, there's nothing but leaves here.
Yeah.
Like in the parable of the soils, which I referenced in Mark chapter 4, I think the most frightening of the soils is the third soil amongst the thorns and the thistles that grows up and becomes almost mature, but never bears any fruit because it's choked out by the things of the world. It's just like totally frightening. Yeah. You know, the seed that bounces off the path, you're like, yeah, fair enough. Mm-hmm. The shallow soil, you kind of go, yeah, that's, you know, that's a bit of a bummer, but you know, like, you know, what are you going to do with no roots? This has everything. And you think about it from a discipleship perspective, it has everything except the distance from the concerns of the world, and it bears absolutely no fruit.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, we can sometimes be, and you know, like thinking about our context, social media and all those sorts of things, the appearance of things.
Yeah.
We can be fooled by that.
Yeah.
And I think what we also know is that we can fool people with appearances. Right. I don't really have to have it all together to look like I've kind of got it mostly together for an hour and a half on a Sunday night.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I can fudge that one. you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I can appear to have it all together. And, you know, again, there are times and places, right, where just got to keep it together,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah. This is not the place for me to fall apart and lay it all out on the table. Mm. Yeah.
But if that becomes my pattern, right, because then we can become so good and adept at hiding our fruitlessness that people just assume that it's there. And then we get caught in this pattern of never being able to really admit, actually, I'm just making it all up.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing there. I think that, so I think appearance is a really tricky one for us to get fooled by. I think sometimes we can associate success with fruitfulness.
Mm. Ooh, that's big.
Yeah, which is probably more of a Venn diagram. There are certain things that are successful that are also fruitful. But I think there are some things that are successful that are not fruitful.
Oh, gosh, and how are we supposed to tell the difference? I'm doing my best over here.
This is already question three.
Oh, gosh. It's the fourth question. Wow.
But you know what I'm saying? Okay. Like, you know, and I'm not sure if this is the right analogy, but, you know, there have been a number of relatively high-profile...
I was going to ask this question. Yeah. So, like... Is there such a thing – sorry, I'm jumping in, but you can – I'll give you the microphone back soon. Like, is there such a thing as being able to have fruit in some areas but fruitlessness in others? Because, you know, yes, there have been some key church leaders where I think it would be safe to say that there is a lack of fruit in terms of character, but there – I don't think you can deny the fruitfulness of ministry.
Yeah.
So so how do you exist in that tension? Mm. What does that look like to kind of go?
Yeah.
Well, like, so you are bearing fruit.
Yeah.
In this area.
Yeah.
But over here, not so much.
Yes.
Are you still fruitless in that moment? Like,
yeah.
Can you transfer fruit? I don't like.
Yeah, I don't know that it's a zero sum equation.
Yeah.
Like you're either fruitful or you're not fruitful. Mm. Like I think that I could probably point out some areas of my life where there's some fruitfulness. Mm-hmm. Right. And there's some areas, some branches where I'd be like, that sucker needs to be pruned. You know, possibly just cut right back. Now let's start that again. And so I don't think anyone's life is entirely
one or the other.
Yeah, one or the other. And I think it does make those sorts of high profile circumstances and scandals particularly difficult.
Yeah.
And I think we have to be very careful. Like, we don't want to say that, well, because it's been so fruitful, all the unfruitfulness is okay. Right. That's one
absolutely.
That's one of the things that's kind of come out in these stories, kind of a common pattern.
But on the flip side, it's, well, because of this fruitlessness, we're now going to question
the fruitfulness of the whole thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Becomes complex. And I think, you know, that can have huge implications for those who were the recipients of that fruit.
Well, yeah. And I think that, and maybe I like when conversations kind of bear fruit like this one, you know, but I think that one of the really critical pieces is for us to recognize that all true fruitfulness comes from Jesus, right? Which then spares us from some of the questioning of the fruitfulness of a ministry or of a leader who has been proven to be less than perfect, which we were all pretty sure of anyways, but now it's come out in a very overt, clear, sometimes devastating way.
Yeah.
You know, so one of the early controversies in the church in the kind of the fourth century as persecution was coming to an end was about the validity, particularly of baptism, based on the worth of the bishop or the priest who baptized you. Right. And so under pressure, when persecution came, there were some clergy who fled. Right.
Yeah.
And when they came back, there were a bunch of the hardliners who basically went, you ran away, you're no longer worthy. And those who you baptized are therefore basically not baptized.
Yeah.
And the church's response was clear and I think absolutely spot on. And that is to say that the effectiveness of baptism cannot be tied to the worth of the one baptizing you.
Mm. Yeah.
Or we're just going to be happy to baptize people all the time.
Yeah.
Just to kind of cover our bases.
You're going to have to dunk in the pool on your way into church every week.
Yeah, and probably on the way out. And maybe if you do that every week of your life, possibly someone will have been worthy enough for your baptism to stick.
Yeah.
So the effectiveness of baptism, it works, quote unquote, because Jesus is in it and the Spirit is given. And so the character of the one officiating is, shall we say, not important.
Mm.
Now, again, we would say that ultimately you'd probably want someone who's not just a dropkick and, you know, is kind of says he follows Jesus but doesn't actually do anything that Jesus suggests.
Yeah.
But to some degree, the point is valid.
Mm.
Even the most despicable, you know, kind of backslidden follower of Jesus who baptizes someone, the baptism still works. Like the fruitfulness of that is because Jesus is in it.
Mm.
So the fruitfulness of any of these ministries where there has been scandal, I think the fruitfulness counts because it's the fruitfulness that Jesus has brought.
Yeah.
If it's the fruit from the individual, then we're in all sorts of trouble. Mm. So if we tie fruitfulness to a particular person or a particular program or a particular church community, we can get in trouble awfully quick.
Mm.
And so I think we need to be able to delineate, this is the fruit that Jesus brings. Mm. And how do you identify that? Well, it's goodness, patience, kindness, goodness. Like it's the stuff we kind of talked about. It's the alignment with the purposes that God has for us, the desired result for our lives. And where we see that fruitfulness, that's the work of Jesus, not the work of such and such a pastor or such and such a worship team or such and such a community of faith or such and such a book or whatever the case might be. So I think that's a really critical piece for us to, I guess, to identify fruitfulness in that space.
Yeah.
But I think we can be blinded by the personality.
Yeah.
Or by the, and not even the personality, by the power of a program or whatever the case might be. And we can so quickly put our trust in
those things.
People, things, techniques, whatever it is, instead of
looking
in
to
Jesus.
The Lord and that miracle. There's another parable of, is it the farmer or is there's another one? It's not the soils, it's the other seed one where the farmer just says,
you know the other seed one.
The other one.
The other one where they're just chucking seed around.
No, he goes to sleep and doesn't know how it grows. It's
the other one. It's just beyond the parable of the soils in Mark 4. And Jesus gives the interpretation, then talks about the farmer who sows
the seed.
And then whether he goes to sleep, whatever he does, the water comes, like the rain lands, and
it's
stuff
God
grows.
That brings
and he
the
doesn't
growth.
Know how.
Yeah, that.
And I think he relates that to the kingdom of heaven.
Yeah.
And so there is that idea as well that God needs to be at work
doing
in it.
The work. God is the one.
So I think that, you know, when we're talking about this question about what blinds us, right?
Yeah.
Again, sometimes it can be that we're responsible for the fruitfulness of it, right? I think that can be a blinding factor.
Mm.
We can also, I think, you know, I remember reading a book a number of years ago now. It was about, I think it was called Introverts in the Church, I think was the title of it. But he was basically he kind of started by talking about the fact that a lot of evangelical churches in the West are designed for extroverts.
Yeah. It's you and me, Matt.
I know. I feel bad. I'm so sorry.
I know.
You have a place here too.
Yes, we love
you. I'm sorry if I'm too much.
But there's so much of it that's focused on speaking and upfront. And,
Oh, 100%.
Right? And so we can end up, and that's different in different denominational families and whatnot. There'd be certain denominations where that wouldn't be nearly as important.
Mm.
But we do, sometimes we associate fruitfulness with what's important to our denominational traditions.
Mm.
You know, so we value thoughtfulness, or we value people who are well-spoken, or we value people who are really charismatic, or we value people, whatever the case might be. And it's not about not wanting to value those things, but sometimes we can confuse someone who kind of fits the mold
as
our being
flavor.
Fruitful, rather than being truly fruitful. So I think that there's a whole bunch of stuff in that. I think from a church perspective, this is away from the individual, but I think from a church perspective, we can also associate numbers with fruitfulness.
Yeah.
And while numbers, I think, are important, what do they say? You measure what's important to you. So, you know, numbers will come into it at some point in time, but we have to be very, very careful about what we're counting and how we're counting. And all of those sorts of things. So I think those are some of the things that can kind of distract us a bit from what real fruitfulness is. You know, and sometimes, you know, like with the temple, it comes back to appearance. Like, it looks fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, I'd love to preach again. I've done it at least once, but I preach on Mark 13, where his disciples basically, it's the last thing that happens before Jesus dies, really, in terms of his last visit to the temple. And his disciples said, you know, Rabbi, look at the stones. Yeah. Like, look at the foundations. This place is just spectacular. And Jesus goes, it'll all be torn down, which leads into them kind of going, pardon me. Right? Which is interesting, given that he's already been saying, I'm going to tear the thing down.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And they kind of went, oh, this isn't a parable? Like, when is that going to happen? What are going to be the signs? Yeah. Right? And Jesus kind of goes into a fairly lengthy description of that. But, you know, I think that there's something profound in even the disciples of Jesus going, man, this place looks fantastic, isn't it? Yep. It's just a wonder of the world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like something to be really proud of. And Jesus is like, man.
Have you been listening at all?
Yeah, have you been listening at all? Yeah. And because of the disciples, the answer is, well, yeah, but apparently not. So, yeah. So I think that those are some of my thoughts on that.
Oh, right on.
Fantastic.
Yeah, man, that took me somewhere I wasn't ready to go.
We didn't know that
was
happening.
As you tend to do, Raider. It's just Jesus takes the wheel.
There it is.
Well, thank you so much for another big three.
Thank you. Good to see you guys again.
Oh, rocks. I'm spinning.
Yep.
I'm spinning. Me but too. Oh, great stuff in that. Yep. What was your kind of, what was the fruit that you,
the
oh, here
fruit,
we go.
The fruit, the fruit. Oh, my gosh. You, I don't know, but my challenge is now to go and learn the fruit. Like, because I'm like, what is it? Love, joy, peace, patience, goodness, kindness, gentleness, faithfulness.
Self-control.
Hey, tell us if we got them.
Look, between the two of us,
we'll have it.
We were able to answer what one man, Mark Rader, could answer by himself. So this is going to be fun. His long service leave is going to be fun.
Yeah. But seriously, what a great personal challenge to even just look at your own faithfulness and your fruitfulness. Sorry, not faithfulness.
Yeah.
But to kind of look at it, you know, how does God see me? You know, how does God see us? Mm. You know, what are the things that he's actually asking us to do? Not to achieve, but, you know, to get on board with his purpose, to be aligned with him. Mm. Really good sort of reflection question to kind of chew on.
Yeah.
Yeah, love it. What about yourself?
Yeah, I think, Mark's sermon on Sunday, that there was kind of like you said, it was rebuke-esque.
Rebuke light.
And I think rebuke light, which is nice. But that whole like, what fruitlessness am I blinded to just because it looks the part, just because it looks shiny, and what fruitlessness in me looks the part.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh man, that's a rough question. It like there's a rebuke coming.
Yeah.
Like, but. Oh,
it's like the plastic bowl of fruit that your great auntie used to have on the table. this is my fruit plastic, you know, or is it glass grapes?
This grape does not taste good.
What's the facade that we come up with?
The facade. Yeah. I think that's exactly it. What's the mask? What am I masking as fruit for? That's a rough question. And I think, you know, it's a question that you want to invite the Spirit into, you want to invite close people
you and a few
to kind of speak that, hey, we know you and have you, have you considered this?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think, you know, to Mark's point, you know, there are parts of our lives that probably bear fruit and there are parts that probably need a prune. Oh, and I think that on purpose questioning of, okay, where do I, like, what needs a prune?
Yeah.
Is a painful process, but I like super imperative.
Yeah, and it's so necessary.
And, you know, we need to ask those questions. Yeah. We need to consider them and we need to be willing to face up to the answers really sometimes. Yeah. We don't want to, but
this is the discipleship journey, right? You're a lifelong learner. You know, your life is not your own. You belong to Christ. Mm. He's saved you. He's redeemed you. Mm. And the thing is, we can come to him with that fear that we have, you know, that the concern that like there are parts of me that need to be pruned and Jesus is so faithful and so loving, and the way he does that is incredible.
But diligent as well.
He'll do the work.
He'll get there. He'll get it done.
but it's not with that sense of condemnation.
No,
you know, it's the conviction of the Holy Spirit, you know, and because he wants to see us flourish and grow and to be more made in his image. And,
what a challenge but an invitation rolled into the one.
Good times, Easter.
Here we go.
Good times at Easter.
In 3 days. Well, thanks, Rox. Hey. Excited to keep the conversations going in the big three over the coming months. Well, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure that you're there at one of our services this Sunday and that you snap the Slido QR code or follow the link before the sermon to get involved. If you've enjoyed the Big Three podcast today, take the time to give a star rating and be sure to subscribe to stay up to date with all future episodes. Well, thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.